Look like you're losing a fight with the mic.
I fucking hate this thing.
Just work for me.
That's how all of your one-on-ones go as well. But hey, let's do a podcast.
I think I've won.
All right, well, let's do a podcast then.
Yes.
Boom. All right, please tell me that you've prepared something for this.
I have researched recessionary periods and MSPs and industries that go really well. So I've got a lot of good talking points around.
Good.
That.
You better, because I don't. I've got what's in the document, which, yeah. But again, you know, I'm giving you the talking points for you to research. How about you come to the table with some talking points? Yeah. Okay, well, I'll do, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are we starting with? Let's start with the fact that we're almost certainly in a recession, or if we're not in one, we're about to hit one. That's grim.
Coming 2023, 2024.
I was talking to a guy today, Will Slappy from Alabama, who is going to be, I think we'll probably release that after this. So I think the chronological sort of timeline there is not going to make this seem weird. Yep, getting a thumbs up. But he was pretty adamant that we're already in a recession. It's just the lagging indicators that'll confirm it are yet to be released.
America in recession. Yeah, I think New Zealand not officially in recession yet. That's to come.
What is it, two consecutive quarters of backwards movement on GDP?
Yeah.
Is that the... Like that. Yeah. Again, metric. Have not done economics since like first year of uni, and I'm not even sure I passed that.
Ironically, that was the year after our last recession in New Zealand of 2008. It was my first year of economics. So,
all right. Oh, you were, not that anyone cares about this terrible podcast chat, but you're basically 4 years after me, I think. Yeah, 4 or 5 years. I don't know. No, actually, what am I talking about? My first year was 99. So, yeah. Anyway, let's move away from that. That's more than four. Sad. yeah, let's just cut that. That's not making it to the final edit. Okay, look, now let's talk about, given that we've now identified that at least America is in recession based on our fundamental understanding of the principles of economics, I want to talk about whether or not that actually presents an opportunity for MSPs. So the other day I was meeting with a friend of the show, AJ Williams from Mercury IT here on the Gold Coast. And he was just saying that in his experience, economic downturns are in fact potentially a good time for MSPs as businesses look to outsource some of their IT practices, right? If you can get the same job done without having the fixed cost, it can be scalable with the size of your business and you know, your wage line decreases, then why not look at it? Have you had conversations with any partners in a similar vein, or is everything actually still looking too good over there in NZ for anyone to really be thinking along those lines?
Too much of still glory days here, or blinkers on perhaps might be the better analogy to use. But no, I think for MSPs, there is opportunity out there for those that are playing in the right market. You know, those that operate in healthcare, perhaps automotive industries, deal with food, retail, and by retail I mean like retail of necessity and low cost goods. Anyone supporting those from a tech perspective will be relatively fine, and there's lots of opportunity out there for them around that. But then, yeah, those that are perhaps in fringy or luxury based service support, those ones will be the ones that take a hit, but hopefully they're, you know, lining themselves or have already lined up a kind of a diversification strategy around the markets and industries that they're operating with.
What about location? You know, if you're focused around seats of government for NZ, that'd be Wellington, Canberra over here, but perhaps even capital cities where you've got a strong play in state or federal government. Do you see that as being a risk factor as they potentially look to scale back funding on a few projects?
I think, yeah, you will see some expenditure cuts, but it's going to come down to the government of the day. I don't know if you can correlate that without doing a lot of research as to, you know, who will suck the most out of IT. But comparative to
any... Have you
not
done the research, Nick?
I have not.
I was really counting on you to do the research.
I do not have the time to do that much research. But no, if you think about the world of IT expenditure in 2022 versus 2008 and how much more gets spent on cybersecurity now and those kind of elements. Mm. Can you actually afford to reduce expenditure on that and cut back on those kind of arguably critical services that are needed to keep a businesses going and privacy secure and meet all those compliance requirements and obligations? I don't think we will see a huge reduction in expenditure. We might see some deferred expenditure, if anything. But
so that's the whole project versus managed services play, right? Like the projects might flatten out. There'll be a reluctance to make big plays. But you're absolutely right. I think the day-to-day BAU kind of costs, there might be an appetite for making sure that the best bang for buck is being acquired, but you can't just stop, you know, having your security licenses and your appliances in play. But I guess that's the other thing I was thinking is if private business does look to outsource some IT functions during this period, is there an easing of the skills shortage, at least from an MSP's perspective, as some, you know, smart people are let go from internal IT teams and are out in the market looking for a next gig?
That's an interesting one, because the key driver of the skills shortage in IT.
Did you say guilds shortage?
Yeah, it's kind of like a weird like mouth thing.
I just want to call you up on that, because last week you blamed, a couple of weeks ago, you blamed COVID voice for that. So I'm just going to be ruthless now and just say, no more blaming COVID. You just talk weird.
Just going to own that weird one as human error.
Anyway, the guilds shortage. Carry on.
The guilds shortage is actually more around qualified engineers and those that are actually kind of mid to senior, you know, tier two and up, where they're actually quite decent, not just fresh out of uni or fresh out of tech or you know, new to the industry. From those, you can scoop up people. There's always, you know, a whole row of high school leavers and things coming through if you want to do purely bums on seats to plug shit in and answer emails. But when you actually want people to do, you know, operational deployments of cybersecurity or, you know, cloud migrations and things like that, they've got to have some skill set. There's got to be a lot of time and investment done with them to get them to that point where they can, you know, succinctly and efficiently do that. I think if you're going to outsource those to perhaps lower skilled markets or certainly try and differentiate yourself that way, you're probably not going to see huge amounts of savings by doing so. I think you'll see maybe if they pull it off, a half-assed project potentially, perhaps some questionables around security depending on who you're using, the people coming into people's tenancies and things like that. There's a whole bunch of elements that come into it. But I don't think it's a strong play. I certainly wouldn't be necessarily looking to that. But if it was just frontline support, perhaps you're working in telecommunications in Spain, you know, touching on the other one. You just want people to answer the phone so that you've freed up that other engineering resource and you've promoted and trained them to do so, as part of retaining their talent over that period. Then that could be a reasonable justification for doing so.
But the cost of any position, even those entry level positions, from what I hear in the industry at the moment, is just exponentially increased over the last 24 months. And that's leading a lot of people at the moment, a lot of MSP operators and managers, to outsource positions, you know, Philippines or elsewhere. And, you know, the idea that if there's more people in the market, obviously supply and demand means that the at least the rate of increase in the cost of those positions should level out, you would think, but who the hell knows. But I guess on that, on the concept of the outsourcing, offshoring, whichever you want to call it, I'm in two minds with that one. So if you've got an MSP A who says, look, I can't get the people onshore at a price that makes it possible for me to retain the current per head price points, they offshore those roles. Will their customers still see their brand representing the same value? Will the interactions with the clients still retain the same value? And will that actually allow them to retain those per head costs, or will there be a lower perceived value? And if it's value-based pricing, will that price point actually need to drop as a result? And what appetite, if any, does your average client have for paying more for local support?
I think, you know, and it's probably something that I don't think MSPs have done particularly well, is really making a distinction between their entry-level products and services and their high-quality, high-functioning, properly managed services. And, you know, with outsourcing, we may see that start to come to light.
Give me a real-world example of how they could, how an MSP could actually do that, could differentiate between their products and or their tiers, I suppose.
Yeah, so if you look at it from a support perspective, purely around, so you've got your managed services covered because that's the bare minimum. It has to, you have to tick all the, you know, all the, you have to have all the right ingredients in that cake to deliver that service. But then there's different support. I do. I love the cake analogy. It's good. I learned that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, actually. Time has flown by since I came across the cake analogy. But with those MSPs, they can have, here's our core services and here's the three levels of support, you know, gold, silver, bronze, whatever you want to call them. And there's a really just pure best effort. It's, we'll provide the infrastructure and a little bit of proactive maintenance to ensure your, you know, your threat base is covered. But if you want any of those moves, adds and changes and things like that, then that's best effort. We'll get around to it where we can and you'll pay for that, versus, you know, silver package, if you want to go there. That might be, you know, a higher committed rate built into that monthly cost. And, you know, you'll have some more set SLAs around delivering that service to that customer and then so forth, being more premium, being shorter. I think there's definitely a market for that.
Maybe. But the counter to that is, what if you just better qualify the kind of customer that you want to appeal to? And you either go, look, we've got onshore support who are highly skilled and excellent communicators, and there's a price point for that, versus B, you're a client who's price driven and less responsive to value on offer and doesn't care if it's a bit harder to get to the end result when you call in for support. Maybe that's just how you qualify in or out clients. Because if you try and be everything for everyone, I feel like you end up getting kind of, you don't be the best at anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's an element of that. I think there's also ways to enhance what you've got. So if you are perhaps you sift around the lower end of the market, you know, you've got that option to charge a premium for certain parts of that business. So, you know, if you're, say, you're a low cost operator in the legal market, you might offer all those partners a managed services package around support that is at a premium for those select users, because they are seen as a priority in that business and anyone else is just kind of, you know, be chump change. And again, when we're talking about recessionary times, they're going to want to still reduce their expenditure. And by having split support structures and things like that across their business, that may be more appealing to people going to market for MSPs over this period.
I feel like there'll be a scale of MSP that could work for, where they could segment their customer base and then below a certain size, it probably wouldn't really translate. But it's interesting, even from a account management, which I'm keen to start reframing as customer success management, coming up with thanks Marnie Stockman for that quick call out to her. But I feel like there's an ability, certainly in that play, in that space, to differentiate the customers by size and requirements, and go, you know, you don't need a quarterly business review when you've got 20 staff and you're pretty set and forget, versus, you know, 3,000 staff, we're going to have a lot of business reviews. They're not going to be quarterly. They'll be monthly. There'll be risk assessments. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on. So yeah, I don't know. I think there's potentially something in it from a support perspective, but the MSP scale would probably dictate how successful that can be. How much you've previously qualified your clients and what range or spread you have of client types currently. And then from a, you know, customer success management and ongoing relationship with them, past support, just what general engagement looks like and how you can segment that. But it just reminded me, though, talking about offshoring, Telstra's got these billboards all around the place here, and they say, bringing jobs back on shore. And that's basically it, with a picture of a person in a help desk. There's one just down the road, huge billboard. I don't know about you, but when I see that, all it really highlights is that they originally took all the jobs offshore. It doesn't sort of, I don't feel like giving them a pat on the back for that. It's more just like, you guys suck. Like, and again, that sounds like a stab at Telstra, because it clearly is, but not with my Lightwire hat on, more with just like a consumer hat. Like, I just look at it and go, that doesn't bring the right connotations to mind from an advertising perspective. The idea that there's a strong market relationship play, or a brand association play, with bringing shores back, quote unquote, onshore. Does it land for you?
Well, it does land with their price increases of recent for mobile. So it's coming soon. So everything has a cost. We're bringing it back. Hey, our price has gone up. So, you know, it's all relative, but. Yeah. To your point, I agree. It does highlight that they have moved it away as a behemoth. I think it's, you know,
so if, every telco, but every telco in the B2C space has really been trying hard to not increase their prices, because so many are price leaders or trying to position themselves as price leaders in a very commoditized market, right? So NNZ Spark has gone, bring your own device. Now that's going to make support harder. It's going to make provisioning harder, more complex, but devices are expensive, getting more so with inflation. How do they keep their end user price points at the same level, but you know, decrease their overheads? Well, hey, bring your own router, save $5, whatever it is, saves them 15, and off they go. Price point stays at the same level, GP potentially increases. We're starting to still see cracks though. So like you said, Telstra's increased their price on some mobile plans, albeit $3-4, something like that. But it does show that there's razor thin margins in play across most of the market. There's a really interesting stat that gets repeated every now and then on the Comms Day podcast, which is the entire telecommunications sector in Australia makes as much profit annually as the smallest of the big four banks in Australia. So just one of the top four banks makes more than the whole sector. So when you take that into account, you think about things like return on investment and just general free cash flow. There's not a lot of room, right? So in a period of high inflation, what are we now, 6-8%? God only knows. But there's a real sense of there's just a clear need for these businesses to start increasing price points. And Telstra looks like it's broken first, and there's going to be more to follow.
Yeah, and I think there's been enough forewarning of it, and people have experienced other price increases over the last few months, that it's now a okay time to come and do so. You know, they're not being... We're doing it now. We're the first to go off the absolute cave of the rank. That doesn't even make sense. But, you know, they're not being leaders in that sense. You know, they're not just being like, hey, we see price rises might be a thing in the future. Let's just do it now and lead the way with that.
I don't ask a lot of you, but if I could just ask that when you do come on the podcast, you could make sense, that'd be great. Pretty important.
It would. Yeah.
Hey, so just coming back, because... Yeah, just a little bit of detail there, just to work on. It's fine. I zoned out a bit before when you were talking, because I do that sometimes. But what a giant tool. I want to come back to that whole point before, where you were talking about the fact that you know, any future layoffs in the private sector or government sector for internal IT teams wouldn't equate to better access to skilled people inside of MSPs, or people running MSPs looking for that. Was your argument basically that the kind of positions that would be laid off in those other companies would really just be entry-level support, and then not the scarce resource that people are really looking for in MSPs at the moment?
I think if we're going to see layoffs in those areas, it would be from more of a government sector. It'll be specialists involved in particular projects that have been brought on. Their ability to pivot into other sectors or other parts of tech might be interesting, and they might be willing to or adaptable for that. That comes down to the individual person, though. I think you will see a truancy of lower entry level support, because it's easier to drop out. But at the same time, I think we need to be conscious that we are still on the tail ends of a pandemic and work from home, and that seems to require a lot more hands-on support than perhaps we've previously seen. So, you know,
I don't understand the use of the word truancy in that sentence, but that could be on me. I only think of
truancy. It's not the right word to use, but it's the one that
I'm just calling you up on everything, Dad. It's great.
It's a roast. This is a roast, not a podcast.
I think the work from home concept is going to be here to stay, but not necessarily because of the pandemic. Like, I feel like that's almost in our rearview mirror. I read today, I heard today that I can't read. I never learned to read. I heard that you don't have to wear masks in airports from Friday, I think, over here. Could be misquoting that, but it's something like it could be as soon as Friday. Airplanes, yes. Airports, no. So at this point, you can get COVID on planes still, but not in airports. So things are getting easier. I guess the point there is that,
lucky's the sum.
Yeah, still note you guys very much. Airports.
Oh, we're masks into cafes, but you can't catch it when you take it off to sit down still type of scenario. But you don't have to wear it at the gym because you can't catch COVID at the gym. It's still stupid.
Good times. Personal opinions only. Please don't send any hate mail to Lightwire.
Any disclaimer available, just put it on the website.
Yes, views represent Nick Phillips' view only, and the company takes something. I'm really bad at disclaimers. All right, so the only other thing I really had to talk about today was the concept of wasted digital ad spend, because I keep going or coming across on virtually every platform I use 3CX ads, like YouTube particularly. Pretty sure even Instagram, which really are the only two things I use, but the 3CX ads are just every single time. And I'm thinking, well, A, we sell that at work. B, I use it at work. I couldn't be more engaged with it if I tried. And yet I keep getting served up these ads. How can we, and this probably isn't a question you can answer, I probably need to get like Lars or someone from the marketing team on to answer, but it just seems like there's got to be one of the biggest inefficiencies in marketing has to be serving up ads to people that have already bought. Like, have you ever bought something and then you start getting ads for that thing?
Yes. Was it last weekend we started seeing this? Heather and I both started seeing the same ad, and it just came, like, we both saw it once, mentioned it once, and then that was all we saw for the rest of the weekend. We were bombarded with it. But when we have cases like that, I feel it's not in-house marketing running those ads. That is outsourced marketing that says, my budget's 100,000 and I want you to just shove it through as many people as possible. And they don't care about the quality. They don't care about the conversion rate. They're tasked with spend $100,000 on Google ads and make sure it gets in front of these people.
Just wrong metrics.
And they'll deduct a percentage of the ad spend as their commission for doing said work. Pocket that. And that is why we have so many digital marketing agencies around the place.
Actually, Heather, your wife has a very, very strong marketing pedigree. We should ask her that question. If you come back with the answer for next episode, why, other than your theory, whether or not that theory is correct, it'd be great to fact check that. Maybe we can just get Heather to take your seat for the first 5 minutes of the next episode, and then we'll swap you guys out. But no, just all right, marketing chat finished and I'm in. I just feel like it's just such a massive waste. I'm tempted to just click away at each ad I see just to drive the cost up without any conversion. That'll be my plan.
And we'll probably see an increase in licensing costs to follow.
Good point.
Because I've suddenly spent a lot more on marketing. Ads in general, I think if you're going to do them properly. Like, don't just half-ass it, because otherwise you're just throwing money into the abyss. You're better off spending that on your product, on your staff, on your customer. Reinvest it back into the business. Don't just frivolously spend it.
Yeah. Oh, I might actually hit up our team and actually ask, you know, how do we make sure that we're not doing basically the same thing? Partners are already working with us, getting served up, God knows what. Probably something I should have my head around, given, you know, it's what I do. Well, moving on. I'm going to stop highlighting things I don't know. All right, cool. Anything else you want to talk about before we leave you alone for this week?
Oh, I think that's a good one. No, let's wrap that up there. I think it's been a insightful and roasting podcast.
That's my favorite kind. All right, done. Thanks, Nick. We'll catch you next time.